Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We're hoping very soon to have with us on the line David Kirby, talking about his book, Evidence of Harm. Mercury and Vaccines and the Autism Epidemic, a Medical Controversy. And, of course, what is autism? Well, it's these young children who suddenly developing normally, and the typical story, and I've heard this from so many parents, they were meeting all of their regular points of advancement. They would begin to walk at the proper time and begin to talk and be toilet trained and all of these things. And then they'd take a shot, an immunization, childhood immunization. Maybe it would be the first one. Maybe it would be the second or third one. Usually they'd get a number of shots the same day. Oh, no harm at all in doing that. The doctor will assure the parents. And then, of course, the child begins to regress, and they lose their ability to talk, and they may even lose their ability to be toilet trained, and they may lose their ability to really function at all and interact with human beings. And this, of course, is what autism is really all about. And, of course, autism was really very, very rare originally. It was about 1 in every 10,000 American children was autistic. Today, it's about 1 in 166. And of course, it is predominantly much more in boys, much more common in boys than in girls. Well, that is the background. We have David Kirby on the line because he knows a lot more about this subject than I do. David, thank you so very much for being with us.
It's my pleasure to be here. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Now, remember, this is an entirely different audience, so you can repeat everything we talked about before. And because we have three different audiences, we do every day. So
okay.
let me once again ask you the question, how did you, as an investigative journalist, get involved in this story of autism, and the question as to whether the mercury in the vaccines produces autism?
Well, going back to November of 2002, I just happened to be looking into autism as a possible story idea for some women's magazines, and a mother I was speaking to out in Los Angeles was trying some alternative treatments on her child, and she sort of casually mentioned that a lot of people thought that the cause of this growth in the rate of autism might be related to mercury in vaccines. And I listened to her respectfully, but thought maybe she was wrong. It didn't make a lot of sense to me, or if there was mercury in vaccines, certainly the government was monitoring the situation and would not allow it to approach anywhere near a dangerous level, although it still seemed very unusual. I kind of put that in the back of my mind, and just about a week later, the House of Representatives passed the Homeland Security Bill, and the country woke up the next morning to find out that a writer had been stuck in at the last moment to dismiss lawsuits against Eli Lilly and vaccine makers for having put mercury into vaccines given to kids in the form of a preservative called thimerosal. So I said to myself, well, A, that mother was right, there is mercury in vaccines, and obviously some people suspect it might be contributing to autism, and if people in Congress are going to act in that manner to protect the drug companies, there might be something worth looking into here.
All right, fine. And of course, maybe somebody ought to be concerned about protecting the children. So we're going to be back here in just a moment with David Kirby, his book, Evidence of Harm, fascinating story, and disheartening story, too.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. Our guest this afternoon is David Kirby. We're talking about his book, Evidence of Harm, and if you haven't read it, you should. We carry the book because we think it is certainly the definitive work that we have available today, going into one of the most incredible stories you'll ever read. And, of course, it goes into the what's happened to the lives of so many families where they have an autistic child, or two autistic children, and the devastation it is for the families and for the child as well. So David was just telling us that he, of course, is an investigative journalist, and some parent had told him that, you know, many parents believe that the autism had come on following certain vaccine shots or multiple vaccine shots. And then about a week after the parent had told him that, he learned that in the Office of Homeland Security legislation, sometime in the middle of the night, with nobody knowing, somebody snuck in a rider saying that there would be no lawsuits against Eli Lilly and no lawsuits against the vaccine manufacturers for putting thimerosal into the vaccines, you know, and charging them, trying to get them to pay for destroying the lives of the children. So here Congress is passing this legislation, and... Well, I think that got his curiosity. You pick up the story there, David.
Well, my curiosity was piqued even further before I even had time to fully look into that one. On the day that the Senate passed the same bill, Bush administration lawyers went into the Federal Vaccine Court, which is a federal program set up just to pay out injuries on vaccine injuries, pay out awards, and they moved to seal all of the records, all of the discovery material, all of the government-provided data, permanently and forever. In other words, anybody outside of those cases would not have access to this taxpayer-funded data generated by the government. And in fact, families, the only people that would have access to them under this order would just be the lawyers for the families, and any families that had already received some of these documents, they would be subject to, well, basically government agents would come out to their house and round up these documents, and families that didn't relinquish the documents would face criminal penalties.
In other words, basically sounds pretty much like a fascist state, almost sounds like some sort of a cover-up.
Well, those are your words, not mine, it's certainly enough to be disturbing, and certainly enough to pique my journalistic curiosity yet again. When you read this protection order, and it's in my book, Evidence of Harm, it's chilling that the federal government would
hold that thought right there, please.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and David Kirby was talking about not only, of course, did somebody put the legislation to the Office of Homeland Security bill having to do with limiting lawsuits against Eli Lilly and the vaccine manufacturers for putting thimerosal in the vaccines, but then the Bush administration has gone into the vaccine court, which is set up to pay out claims for families, you know, where the children have been harmed for vaccines, and suddenly to seal all the records there, irreparable, I assume, to the autism and the mercury, and not only that, that even any parent that had any of these records, you know, they would send agents out to pick up the records. Was that a fair statement?
That's the way I read the motion, that's correct. Oh. There was such an outcry, not only by parents, but members of the media, even here in New York, Newsday, wrote an editorial just blasting the administration for this motion. The motion was withdrawn. The judge didn't even have time to rule on it. The administration agreed that it was going a little too far, and they withdrew the motion.
All right. Well, maybe it's sort of like when you get your hand caught in the cookie jar. Why it's pretty hard to say. Maybe it's just you know, the jar jumped up and got it on your hand. You know, people realize that you put your hand in there, and they were trying to, well, in my estimation anyway, to cover up the truth from not only the general public, but other families that had autistic children across America. So now you are really intrigued, and you're going to follow this story through?
That's correct. And initially I tried to write it as a magazine article, and I didn't get much interest from magazines in it. And one day, this was in about December of 2002, I said to myself, you know what, I think this is a book. So I wrote up a proposal that was really based on the politics of this all. I thought it was fascinating, and I started researching the ties between Eli Lilly and pharma and the Bush administration and both political parties. This is not strictly a Republican thing. The drug companies give money to everybody. And I thought it was very interesting. The agent that I took the idea to, who became my agent, Todd Schuster, he's a great guy, convinced me that the best way to tell this story in a way that readers would want to be engaged in and would finish the book and could get through the science is to tell it through the point of view of parents.
You did a wonderful job on that.
Well, thank you, and I do credit my agent for giving me the idea, and it was not easy to weave these personal stories in with heavy-duty science, very complicated law, and rather Byzantine politics. But I think it's interesting to show how those things affect everyday lives and everyday Americans, and, you know, decisions made in Washington or decisions that come down from major universities or the Institute of Medicine greatly impact the lives of people who are living through this every day. And so I think that's an important lesson here, that what happens at the macro level really affects things at the micro level, and we're all participants in this society, and what happens affects us all.
Well, of course, the government, the CDC, and the various government institutions are adamant of the fact there's absolutely nothing to worry about. Mercury doesn't do any harm, but we're going to take it out of the vaccines anyway for American kids, but we're going to keep it in the vaccines we give throughout the rest of the world, and we're going to keep it in the adult vaccines and an influenza vaccine, which we give it to 6 months old, but we can assure you there is not harmful at all. So if it isn't harmful, David, why did they take it out? And if it is harmful, why are they covering it up?
Well, boy, first of all, mercury is harmful, and nobody in the government says that mercury isn't harmful. Some people say that mercury in vaccines at the levels given to children was not harmful, apparently, with like a million more qualifiers before that. If you listen closely to what people at the CDC say, and their message kind of evolves over time, but now they're at the point of saying the best evidence we have right now does not point to an association between thimerosal and autism and other disorders. Well, the best evidence is open to subjectivity, I would argue, and I think the term right now is pretty interesting. They're not ruling this out at the CDC. Mercury is dangerous, and it is completely plausible, even today, despite the protestations otherwise, that in a subset of children with a certain genetic predisposition, the injection of organic mercury directly into their developing systems may have produced a neurotoxic effect. Mercury is highly neurotoxic. Nobody will argue that. What we're really arguing over is the dosage. Was it enough to cause harm? And is it possible that this is what's caused the spike in autism in this country?
Well, of course, it was. They give multiple injections, sometimes in a single day, with multiple vaccines that contain this mercury, which is a neurotoxin and affects the brain. And you know, when you add up all the mercury that they're getting, even in a single day, or sometimes with multiple shots, you do get up to toxic levels, aren't you?
Well, you certainly get up to levels that are in excess of EPA safety limits, and on vaccination days. And again, this is, you know, we're talking the 1990s up until about 2002, 2003. Since then, virtually all vaccines given to children have been mercury-free, although there might still be some on the shelf with expiration dates into 2005. That might still contain mercury.
Well, of course, if there's a question of the safety, why don't they pull out anything that might have mercury in it and of course, give our kids the mercury-free vaccine? Why use up something that might harm the minds of our children?
Because it's already been made and packaged and marketed and sold, and it's on the shelf, and
throw away
a perfectly good vaccine, I guess, would be the rationale.
But if it's going to hurt children, who would want to hurt children?
Well, they don't believe it does hurt children.
What if they don't believe it hurts children, then why did they take it out of the vaccine?
As a precaution and as a way of maintaining confidence in the vaccine program. It's a way of reassuring parents that there wasn't mercury in the vaccines given to their children. That's the official line, anyway.
Well, what is the truth? Another, there are CDC databases, and they have analyzed these databases. And there was something, I believe it was the Simpsonwood meeting back in the year 2000. Would you like to talk about that and what they found at Simpsonwood?
Sure. Yes, and it's all related. Shortly after the government, the FDA was ordered by Congress to add up the amount of mercury that children were receiving in their vaccines in this country. And the FDA did that and found out that children were in excess of this EPA limit, especially on vaccination days, sometimes by as much as 100 to 125 times over the limit. And so when that got announced in July of 1999, people at the CDC started looking at a federally funded database that's maintained for vaccine safety to see if there might have been any correlation between the amount of mercury kids were getting and any number of outcomes ranging from autism to ADD, ADHD, speech delay, language delay, tics, etc. This job was handed off to a brand new staff person at the CDC named Thomas Verstraeten, who had just come over from Belgium. And was not involved, obviously, with American vaccine politics, and I believe just wanted to do good science. When he first ran the numbers, he basically compared kids who got mercury to kids who didn't get mercury in their shots, and found that kids in the mercury group just had extremely elevated risks for autism, ADD, ADHD, speech delay, language delay, tics, etc. All of them highly statistically significant. He brought this to his colleagues in Atlanta, and they basically said to him, no, doctor, you did this wrong. We're going to show you the right way to do it. And according to them, the right way to do it was to basically break down the kids into different categories of exposure rates, age groups, things like that. It's called stratification. And by stratifying the data, they broke the kids down into further into substrata, and basically you reduce the statistical power when you do that. The rate for autism then came down to 2.48. In other words, kids who got the most amount of mercury were 2.5 times more likely to get autism than kids who got the least amount of mercury.
But, of course, if you use the original figures, it was much higher than that, wasn't
it? It was about 7.6.
Right.
In the first round, in the second round, it was about 2.48. They ran the numbers again and played around with the entry criteria, and the rate for autism came down to 1.69 relative risk. At that point, they took the data and they presented it at an invitation-only conference outside of Atlanta at a place called Simpsonwood, where epidemiologists and researchers and people from the drug companies and the FDA and academia got together, and Verstraeten presented his data. They discussed the data. They discussed what it meant or didn't mean. And largely, a lot of the discussion was based on what this meant in terms of the vaccine program and what this meant in terms of litigation and what this meant in terms of their own reputations as scientists.
But what about the children? Does anybody consider the children whose lives were destroyed or the families whose lives were destroyed?
The only time I can discern there was concern for children in the transcript was one of the doctors, Dr. Johnston, said that he had been called out into the hall and that his first grandson had just been born at 8 o'clock that morning. And until they got to the bottom of this, there was no way, and that's the actual wording, no way that that kid was going to get thimerosal in his shots. Well, this doctor went on to vote that thimerosal was not of much concern, and also that this data that they were looking at should be kept quiet. So he didn't think that the American public should have access to this data, and yet he was going to use this data to prevent his grandson from receiving thimerosal in his vaccine.
And I think it's so interesting that this was almost like a top secret document. They did everything they could to conceal this from the public, to let anybody know the meeting had been held, and this was really classified almost like it was like a state secret to keep it not from Osama bin Laden, but to keep it from the American people.
Well, yes, as a matter of fact, these people, it was a top-secret meeting, it was invitation-only, nobody knew about it, of course the media and the public were not told about it, and the transcript of the meeting was never meant to see the light of day, it was only obtained through the Freedom of Information Act that the parents filed, and when you read the transcript, sometimes people get pretty candid and frank in their discussions, and it makes you wonder if they even knew that it was being recorded. and would be transcribed. They may have known that, but they certainly never thought that the public would be reading their deliberations. And it's a pretty interesting document. It's certainly not the most damning piece of evidence out there, the link thimerosal to autism, but it does show that people knew that they had a problem.
Hold that thought right there.
That will really help you to understand the nature of the spiritual battle in which we're currently involved is Gary Carr's book, The Demonic Roots of Globalism. Now, you may remember Gary Carr's book, Ode to Global Occupation. His second book, The Demonic Roots of Globalism, goes into the very real spiritual forces, the dark and sinister spiritual forces, which have energized those people who are molding the world in which we live today. Going into the background of Masonry, Theosophy, and he actually quotes extensively from the writings of these people who have helped to mold the events of the 20th century. The Demonic Roots of Globalism by Gary Carr will give you tremendous insight into the background of what's happening in America today. And unless you understand the spiritual forces at work, you really can't understand the unfolding of events. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for The Demonic Roots of Globalism by Gary Carr.
This is health journalist Bill Sardi. A secret of healthy aging was recently found among people who have lived unusually long, healthy lives. The longest-lived woman, Jean Calment of France, who lived 122 years, and man, Antonio Todd of the Italian Isle of Sardinia, who lived 115 years, as well as the Queen Mother of England, who lived 100 years, outliving one of her daughters by 3 decades, was their daily consumption of red wine. But health authorities have been reticent to recommend an alcoholic beverage to the public at large until now. Longevinex is the world's first stabilized French red wine extract in a pill, without the calories and without the alcohol or sulfite preservatives. One Longevinex capsule provides the red wine molecules found in 5 glasses of the best red wine. Call 866-405-4000 to order Longevinex. It's a revolutionary dietary supplement. 866-405-4000. 4,000.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Tieri. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
In the last 3 years, gold and silver have been quietly attracting the attention of the smart money investor. And that's with no small wonder when you consider that in those last 3 years, gold has risen over 50% and silver has nearly doubled. So, are you in profit yet? You might think so if you bought gold or silver coins in the last 3 years. And true enough, some coins have increased by as much as 70%. So how do you know how much your portfolio has gained or lost? With a quick call to the asset management professionals at Colonial Resources. 1-800-685-4042. Colonial Resources will give you current market quotes on your gold or silver bullion and collector coins. If you're ready to sell, Colonial pays higher prices for your coins than almost anyone in the industry. And if you doubt that, call the company that sold them to you and ask what they'd buy them for, and then call us. To find out where you stand in the rapidly changing precious metals market, call Colonial Resources today, toll free. 1-800-685-4042. That's 800-685-4042.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this afternoon is David Kirby. His book, Evidence of Harm, and I really recommend this to you. We carry the book because we think it is so vitally important that people understand the background of this this whole incredible story. So here they hold this meeting. It's a secret meeting. They don't want anybody to know about it. And the question is, if there's nothing to hide, Why are they hiding it? And, of course, this actually transcript, which I have a copy of, and I got it from Congressman David Weldon, who was good enough to email it to us. It's about 150 pages, something like that. Gives you the whole transcript of what was said there. And it's so very obvious that these people were all concerned about the relationship between the thimerosal and the vaccines, but they did not want the public to hear, because, my goodness, if people found out that, well, my feeling is that they were afraid it was going to harm the vaccine program. Would that be a fair statement?
That's been one of the major concerns all along, and it continues to be, and we've seen this in other transcripts that we're not supposed to see the light of day, particularly the Institute of Medicine Committee that were leaked, and this is the major overriding theme, is how do we present this message without scaring parents away from vaccination, that there might be some danger here, and how do we tell people that vaccines might be dangerous without scaring them away from vaccination? You can't do that. So there was a desire to not have to ever make the statement that any vaccine could any time be dangerous for any child.
But, of course, we're talking about the fact, at least according to Dr. Mark Geyer in a recent article he wrote, that one in every six American children has either a neurodevelopmental abnormality like autism or Asperger's disease or ADD or ADHD or learning disability or spelling disability or mathematical disability or a behavioral disability. One in six children, that is a catastrophe.
It certainly is, and these are children, and one day they're going to be adults, and some of them will need taking care of, and many of them won't be as productive citizens as we might like, and this is going to put a great strain on our economy and on our general progress as a society, and it's a huge crisis. There was an article the other day that one in six children have asthma. Coincidentally, one in six children are born with mercury levels already high enough to cause neurological disorders in life. This number one in six keeps popping up, doesn't it? It's probably coincidental, but it does make one wonder and give you pause if something in our environment is hurting our children.
And, of course, children who come to this country from other countries, children are far healthier when they arrive than after they've been here for a few years. And this has been shown in a number of different studies. Why do children get sicker when they come to the United States?
Well, I think a lot of that does have to do with diet, quite honestly. And I think the studies I've seen at least have indicated that the Latin Americans, when they come here, and from Asia, immigrants have enormous dietary changes, and usually not for the better. They go from eating more whole foods and you know, closer to the ground, to eating highly processed foods and refined sugars and wheats and everything that we eat in this country.
And, of course, all the aspartame we get. Well, let's go ahead and talk a little bit more. Now, there have been a number of efforts to try to get the truth from the government. Would you like to tell a little bit about Dr. Mark and David Geyer, who, after, spending I don't know how long, were finally allowed to get into the CDC data bank to find out what really happened, because there were certainly some groups of children in HMOs that got their vaccines with thimerosal, and other children that got vaccines that didn't have the thimerosal in it, despite the fact we're told, well, we have to give it to everybody to protect them, you know, from infection. A lot of the vaccines, DPT, don't have thimerosal in it. So it seems to me that's sort of self-contradictory, isn't it?
Well, yes, it is. Mercury is not necessary for vaccines. They use it in the manufacturing process, and once it was in there anyway, they sort of left it in as a preservative. But obviously there are alternatives because, like you said, there were DTP shots without thimerosal as a preservative. MMR has never contained thimerosal. Neither has chickenpox or polio or any number of other vaccines. So it is possible to administer vaccines without mercury in it. But in terms of getting in to see this database, boy, if you think the Simpsonwood meetings were kept under lock and key, this data is treated like nuclear secrets. And getting in to see it is nearly impossible. It took the Geyers 2 years of jumping through bureaucratic hoops, and when they finally did get in to see the data, the software was not working very properly, the interface was not working very properly. They had a very hard time trying to access the data and make any sense out of it.
All right, we're going to have to take another quick break, and then that'll be the last break for the program. So hang on there, David. We'll be right back here. Sure. Our guest, David Kirby, his book, Evidence of Harm. Must read if you have children or grandchildren and you're really concerned about their future and the future of this country.
Have you ever wondered what the Vietnamese War was really all about? Why America, the most powerful nation in the world, spent 10 years fighting in Southeast Asia against a nation the size of the state of Mississippi, and America lost that war? Do you really believe that happened by accident? There's so much to the story of Vietnam that the American people have never really known. And in our four-tape set, Vietnam, the Untold Story, you're going to get the information that you need to understand the tragedy of that event. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for Vietnam, the Untold Story, the story of what really happened in Vietnam that has been suppressed from the American people for the last 20 years.
Hi, this is Joyce Riley, and most of you now know why so many people agree that Miracle 2 soap really is a miracle. Miracle 2 products are now being used by farmers and ranchers to increase their yield. Mechanics and machinists use it in their shops. Chiropractors and physicians are using Miracle 2, and the uses are simply too numerous to mention. Dr. Stan and the folks at Radio Liberty knew right away that the listeners would benefit tremendously by using Miracle 2 products. You can enjoy the benefits of Miracle 2 and help Radio Liberty continue to broadcast Dr. Stan's message by calling 800-544-8927 to order your Miracle 2 today. After you've tried Miracle 2 around the house, you'll probably do just what so many others have done. Get rid of all those toxic cleaners and chemicals under your sink. Call Radio Liberty and order your Miracle 2 today. 800-544-8927. 800-544-8927. Dr. Stan Monteith and so many listeners know that Miracle 2 soap isn't just soap. It's a miracle.
Leading-edge dentists know the profound effect dental materials and procedures have on the health of the entire body. If you've been searching for a holistic trained dentist who can safely treat you, look no further. Dr. David Biles has been a leader in the Santa Cruz dental community for nearly 20 years. He built a solid reputation providing exceptionally high-quality cosmetic and restorative dental care long before learning the very real hazards of common dental practices. Now, as a faculty member of the Institute of Natural Dentistry, Dr. Biles has begun lecturing nationally to other dentists on alternative and complementary dental care. On request, Dr. Biles will safely remove toxic dental materials from your mouth while substituting them with safe, non-allergenic restorations. Call Dr. Biles today and take the next step to improve your health. With sedation and nitrous oxide available, Dr. Biles can help even the most anxious patients. Call 423-0121 and schedule a visit now. That's 423-0121.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest is David Kirby, and he's written a fascinating book entitled Evidence of Harm. And Dr. Geyer is actually a physician. He's a geneticist. He's well known. He's been in practice for many years, written many scientifically oriented peer-reviewed articles, and he got involved in this. He really didn't think there was any harm in thimerosal, but as he began looking into the statistics on this, he became increasingly concerned that maybe, just maybe, these policies of putting a thimerosal in a toxic substance, which everybody knows mercury is toxic, it's so toxic you can't even put it on the skin, but it's perfectly all right to inject it into our children, at least that's what they claim. You know, anyway, Dr. Mark Geyer actually was able with his son to get into the data bank there at the CDC, and you tell the story about how, I mean, it almost was as if they had done everything to be sure that there was no way he could access the information, but there was a woman there who had an autistic child. Would you like to tell that story?
Yeah, it's a pretty remarkable story. The Geyers were there, Mark and David, father-son team, and they flew in a programmer from Dallas who knew the program that epidemiologists use. And they were having lots and lots of trouble. Basically, like I said, the software wasn't loaded onto the computer. It was an old rickety computer that they were given to work on anyway. And the software would be like trying to use your computer without, say, Windows. It'd be like trying to navigate everything in DOS just by using code rather than clicking and pointing. It's virtually impossible unless you know all the codes. This woman who was working there, after telling them that she had an affected child in her family, got up and looked down the hallway and closed the door and very, very quietly showed them how to navigate the database and compare children who got mercury with children who didn't. she also confided in them, apparently, I mean, everybody else that was in the room confirmed this for me, that they were monitoring the database for signs of bioterrorism, and they were looking at the number of autism cases, and in very recent months, in last year or so, they had seen that the rate of autism diagnoses was going down, and this is about 3 or 4 years after the beginning of the removal of mercury from the vaccines, and it's when you would expect to see the rates of new cases start to fall.
But of course they didn't want that information out, because that would point to the fact that the thimerosal was really what was responsible, and then people wouldn't trust them anymore.
Well, yes, I think that may be the case. We need to find out what's in that data, don't we? And that data exists, and you would think that if there was data in there exonerating the CDC and data showing that the rates of autism were exactly as they were today, as they were 4 or 5 years ago, that they haven't come down at all, then that would pretty much exonerate thimerosal. And you would think if they had the data to show that they would be inviting every qualified researcher worth their salt to come down and have a look. But that's not the case. It still remains virtually impossible to get in to see this database. And it remains virtually impossible to see the data post-2000 when mercury started to come out of the vaccine.
All right. Well, what did Dr. Geyer and David find when they actually went through it? What was their impression?
Well, their impression was just looking at DTP shot, the kids who got there's four in the series, and kids who got all four containing mercury compared to kids who got say none in their vaccines, there was a hugely elevated risk for autism among those children. Now, the government has said that there wasn't an elevated risk, or at least in the final published report, they said there was no risk for autism whatsoever. So we have the Geyers who say there's an extremely elevated risk, and we have the government saying there was no risk. All of this needs to be replicated. We need other parties, third parties, to go in and look at the data and evaluate the work of the government and evaluate the work of the Geyers, and tell us what they found in there. I mean, all science needs to be replicated.
Well, of course, will they let the other independent scientists go in and look at the database?
Not so far, and they have been taken to task for that by another committee from the IOM that was set up to look into this.
For the IOM, it's the Institute of Medicine, right?
The Institute of Medicine, excuse me. And they ruled that this data belonged to the people, if you will. I mean, I don't mean to sound like a Boy Scout here, but taxpayers paid for it. We have rights to access this data as long as the names and addresses of the patients is removed from the database, which it is, so the confidentiality is protected. The American people have right to the data that they help fund, and that in the form of qualified researchers who can go in and look at it. But that hasn't happened, and there's absolutely no indication of when that might be able to happen.
Well, now, my understanding is that we had something called methylate, and that at least at one time was put on the skin. You know, it was red, and they used to paint it around wounds. When I would go to medical school and when I first went to practice, that's what you did, to sterilize the area adjacent to wounds. But what happened to that? Was at least some of that taken off the market?
Yes, actually. It's an interesting story, and it's in the book as well. Way back in 1982, a federal panel issued a ruling that mercury in over-the-counter products was inappropriate. They cited a bunch of studies that showed how toxic mercury was, even if you do rub it onto your skin. And they demonstrated that, in fact, it was much more deadly for living tissue than it was for the bacteria it was meant to control. Specifically, it killed chick heart tissue, those cells, 13 times faster than it killed Streptococcus bacteria. So it really even wasn't that efficient, and it was toxic, and they ruled that it, they proposed that it should come out of all over-the-counter topical products way back in 1982.
So it was really too, too toxic to put on the skin, but it was all right to put in the vaccines that we gave to our children. And my understanding, reading your book, of course, is that Congressman Dan Burton, who headed a congressional committee, actually investigated this. He asked some, at least one of the experts, how can it be that thimerosal is too toxic to put on the skin, but it's all right to inject into the children? What sort of response did he get?
Not a very good one. a lot of stumbling, and I mean, how can you answer that question? I think the answer eventually was, well, the amount of thimerosal in the over-the-counter products was much higher than the amount of thimerosal in vaccines. That may or may not be true, but injection has got to be more dangerous than rubbing on skin. And again, we're talking about newborn babies. In fact, we're talking about fetuses, because pregnant women get the flu shot, pregnant women get vaccinated, and pregnant women used to receive a mercury-containing product called Ro-D immunoglobulin, so that the fetuses were already receiving thimerosal on top of that environmental mercury I was talking about that affects one in six pregnancies in this country. And then on the day of birth, they were getting thimerosal, and then at 2 months, they were given quite often up to 125 times over the EPA limit. And then at 4 months, they got about 75 times over the EPA limit. And then at 6 months, they got like another 70 times over the EPA limit, and so on. So the amount of mercury that these kids got injected directly into the systems was significant. And if it's dangerous to rub on your skin, it's dangerous to inject into.
Well, of course, people are going to say, well, if it's really dangerous, though, why doesn't every child who gets this vaccination shot, you know, come down with autism or ADD or ADHD or some sort of a learning disability? Why are they, assuming that this has something to do with the one in six children we have, why are five out of six children fairly healthy?
Well, in most people, ethyl mercury, the type of mercury in vaccines, seems to clear from the body pretty quickly. Most people have pretty efficient defense systems. And in fact, we are able to fend off mercury in vaccines perhaps even better than we are mercury in fish. The half-life in the blood is much shorter. The way we eliminate mercury and other heavy metals through the body is through a system of sulfur-based proteins, glutathione being the most common one and the most... the one that we rely on the most to protect us from heavy metal exposure. Interesting, the group of these proteins and amino acids are called thiols, as in glutathione, and a synonym for that is mercaptan, which comes from the Latin mercurium captans, which means literally mercury capturer. So glutathione is a mercury capturer. And we now know that children with autism, for whatever reason, probably genetic, have very low levels, if not complete depletion, of glutathione and other thiols, or their mercury captures, if you will. So this theory stands to reason, then, that if you expose these kids to the exact same amount of mercury that you expose typical kids, the typical kids are able to excrete the mercury from their systems efficiently, whereas these kids with low or depleted levels of glutathione and other sulfur-based proteins were not. And then you have to ask yourself, well, what happened to the mercury in these kids if they weren't able to excrete it through their hair, feces, and urine, which is the normal route of excretion? Where did it go? It went into their tissue, it went into their organs, it went into their nervous system, it went into their brain. And there is recent research out of the University of Washington Primate Center that would suggest that the mercury from vaccines, once it gets into the brain, decomposes very quickly, and it leaves inorganic mercury behind. It converts to inorganic mercury, and it does so at a much greater rate than the mercury in fish, and this is highly significant.
So now, would that mean it would be more or less dangerous?
It means it would be much more dangerous. Inorganic mercury cannot leave the brain. It gets trapped in the brain. The half-life for inorganic mercury in the brain is about 20 years.
All right. So, and of course, the problem is that if these children have mercury in their brain, maybe not enough to do any damage, but then what happens if they get mercury fillings in their teeth? Or what happens if they get, they eat a lot of fish? Or what happens if they, are in an area where they have a coal plant and there's mercury in the air as a result of burning coal or in the water? Isn't this mercury cumulative in the brains of our people, our children?
Absolutely. It's just not going to cause autism necessarily. It could cause other disorders, including possibly ADD, ADHD, and or just plain old mercury toxicity. Autism seems to happen somewhere either from prenatally until about a year to 18 months. Something seems to happen to the child in that period of development. And just getting back to this inorganic mercury, if I could, there is evidence in also in primates that when this inorganic mercury gets trapped in the infant brain in the first 6 months roughly of life, when the infant brain is still growing and still developing, that the presence of inorganic mercury, now again, organic mercury will wash out. It has a half-life in the brain of about 37 days, whereas inorganic mercury will stay there forever. The presence of this trapped inorganic mercury seems to spark a neuroinflammation. It seems to be an immune-mediated response in which you have this rapid growth of white brain cell matter, the so-called glial cells. And you have this rapid growth of these glial cells, this rapid brain growth, white cell matter, and we see the exact same thing in children with autism. I think that's key. I think that's hugely significant. And I hope that this was a government-funded study, by the way, and I hope that the government will continue to put money into this area of research, because whether we've found the cause of autism or not, we have found that different types of mercury react differently in the brain, and it's hugely important that we know this stuff.
And I think it's really so vitally important that we realize that mercury is one of the most toxic substances, specifically neurotoxic. And there's so many examples, from other studies of, areas where there's been mercury in the water and the shellfish, and you've had whole communities get mercury toxicity with tremendous problems for the mind. Isn't that true?
Yes, and if you look a little bit closer behind some of those statistics, for example, in Japan, when they had these horrible mercury spills, Minamata is the most famous, but there were others in the 50s and 60s, and even in the 70s. The initial outbreaks of disease are mercury poisoning that we see in the adults and children born to mothers exposed to this mercury. But no one bothered to go back and look at the statistics 4 or 5 years after that, which is about how long it would take for an autism diagnosis to show up. And sure enough, there's a spike in autism cases in Japan 4 or 5 years after these giant mercury spills. So it is possible that mercury in any form can cause autism. It just so happens that in the United States in the 1990s, kids were getting massive amounts of thimerosal. And again, if it is some relationship between inorganic mercury getting trapped in the brain, it would appear that vaccine mercury is much more efficient at doing that than mercury in fish.
Well, my understanding is that children in Amish communities, they don't get autism because they don't let their children get vaccinated. Is that true?
Well, that's what the reporting of Dan Olmsted at UPI has revealed, and he's a great reporter, and he's one of the only people in the country going out to try to look at these types of questions. This will take a team of scientists and epidemiologists to verify, but Dan had a really hard time locating hardly any Amish children with autism. He found a few. One was actually adopted from China and had received vaccines. Possibly, by the way, we're talking about adopted children or children from overseas. Oftentimes, adopted children are vaccinated twice. They're vaccinated in their home country, and they're vaccinated again when they get over here. The other ones, there were a couple others that were vaccinated, and the other ones apparently seem to live very, very close to coal-fired power plants in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania. Dan is a reporter, not a scientist. We need someone to go in, and I believe that that's going to happen. I think funding will be made available soon for some university researchers to go look at the Amish. And there's resistance to this idea, and some people say, well, maybe it's just something genetic in the Amish gene pool that's preventing them from getting autism. Well, if that's the case, boy, we should find that out, too. That would be really helpful in the search for treatments and cures and looking for causes of autism. Other people say, well, it's their lifestyle. They don't eat, you know, X and X food, or they don't run electricity in their house, or they don't use cell phones. Well, if that's true, too, then we should be looking at that as well. If autism is the result of some lifestyle issue of Western, you know, modern life that the Amish do not expose themselves to, that would be very helpful and interesting to know.
Do some of these children get better after they've been chelated, after they've had the treatment and changed their diet?
Yes, well, I can absolutely attest to children getting better because I have seen it with my own eyes and ears, and I've followed some of these kids for 3 years now, and their progress in some cases is absolutely stunning.
But why does the CDC then do everything they can to discourage this? Why does the mass media and so many medical organizations discourage the treatment of something that a treatment that might help these tragic children?
Well, chelation can be dangerous, and a child did die about a week ago, quite likely from chelation treatment. We're still waiting for the results of the autopsy. Poor kid in Pennsylvania was receiving IV chelation using EDTA, which is not something that is very common. In fact, most kids I know don't receive IV chelation at all. They receive it orally or transdermally.
Hey, we're out of time. Our guest has been David Kirby, his book, Evidence of Harm. David, thank you so much. We'll look forward to getting on our evening program real soon.
Thanks, Dr. Stan.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Have you ever wondered what really happened at Waco? Have you ever wondered if maybe the government was not giving you the full story? Well, there is the most amazing video. It's called Waco, the Rules of Engagement, 2.5 ripping hours of the story of a government onslaught under a group of peaceable people. Now, their religion may be different than yours and mine, but they were still Christians, they still believed in the Bible, and they believed that the government would one day become their enemy and destroy them. Well, Waco, the Rules of Engagement is a video that everybody who loves freedom should see, because the ultimate conclusion is the government did not want them to come out. The government did everything they could to keep them from coming out, to antagonize them, loud music, lights all the time, to totally create a situation where they could not think clearly or respond normally. Waco, the Rules of Engagement, is currently unavailable through regular sources. Call 1-800-5-HIB-WAR right now.
Concerned about your child's future? Well, it starts with a sound education. VHM provides for that cornerstone of your child's future with a quality education founded on biblical principles. Our school sets high academic goals while developing moral standards. From preschool through eighth grade, your child is taught by experienced and credentialed teachers in all subjects, including our dynamic music program and state-of-the-art computer classes. Proverbs 22:6 says, "Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it." For over 50 years, VHM Christian School has provided peace of mind to parents knowing their children are receiving an excellent education in a loving environment. VHM is located at 427 Capitola Road Extension in Santa Cruz. Won't you call us today at 475-4762? That's VHM Christian School at 475-4762. Doesn't your child deserve a chance to try VHM?
Several years. If so, you've most likely been taken advantage of. In a lot of cases, out and out lied to. There are several tricks of the trade in play in the precious metals and collector coin markets. This is especially true during a hot market. Although it doesn't take a savvy investor to avoid the pitfalls of unscrupulous coin and metals dealers, it does take some common sense and the knowledge of which questions to ask. The asset management professionals at Colonial Resources can arm you with a few simple questions to ask your current broker or coin dealer. To find out if you've been taken advantage of, or if you're thinking of investing, call Colonial Resources toll-free, 1-800-685-4042. The precious metals and collector coin markets are hot and definitely where the smart money is heading. But before you make a mistake that could cost you hundreds or even thousands of dollars, call the professionals at Colonial Resources. The call and the advice are free. 1-800-685-4042. That's 800-685-4042.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and let me suggest if you have an autistic child or you know somebody who does or you want to know more about autism, we've got a great four-tape set. Actually, several of the interviews with physicians who had autistic children and gave up their successful medical practices to try to help these tragic children because there's an organized effort to block treatment of them. And that's the four-tape set on autism. We have two four-tape sets on mercury and mercury intoxication and the mercury in your fillings, of course, which is poisoning you. And many people believe this is directly related to the increase certainly in Alzheimer's disease. We're seeing growing rapidly across America, but the government says, oh, we have no idea what's happening, but we can assure you it's not the fillings. Well, you won't have any question once you've seen the video. It's called mercury, a slow death, and you'll actually see what happens with that tooth when it, of course, gets through the heat that you have in your mouth with a cup of hot coffee, and you'll see the mercury actually venting off of that. It's called the smoking tooth or the smoking truth. And then, of course, if any of you would like to get a free copy of the abstract from Dr. Frudenberg's page up on the internet. Dr. Frudenberg's in his 80s, the dean of vaccinologists, and he points out if you're foolish enough to believe what you're told and take a influenza shot three or four times over a five-year period between age 60 and 65, your incidence of autism goes up 1,000%. Why would they be giving, flu shots and encouraging older people to get flu shots when it's going to increase the incidence of Alzheimer's disease 1,000%? Well, we're having real trouble, ladies and gentlemen, with our Social Security system. There are too many old people, and they're using up too many of the various facilities. It's costing too much for Medicare. It's costing too much for Social Security. These systems are facing bankruptcy. But nothing could be that cruel or crass or indifferent to human suffering, or could it? Would there be anybody out there who would want to hurt children? Well, let me point out that we've killed up to about 40 million children since 1973. Right here in America, unborn children, there really are people who want to hurt children. You must understand we're up against organized evil. You want to read the book, Evidence of Harm. You want to get my book, The Brotherhood of Darkness. You want to get the book, The Beautiful Side of Evil by Johanna Michelson. Blood on the Altar by Craig Heimbichner. And if you have not yet seen the videos, they sold their souls for rock and roll. Why we have the 3, 4, the 10-hour videos and DVDs and several of those, that's they sold their souls and rock for rock and roll. You'll see Timothy Leary. Remember the Harvard professor who went out to get all the kids in America on drugs, talking about how he's carrying out the programs of Aleister Crowley. Who was Aleister Crowley? He was a Satanist. You'll find about Alfred Kidsey, who introduced sexual promiscuity and told us homosexuality was perfectly normal. Harry Hay, who organized the gay liberation movement, and the people who organized the pornography industry in America, they were all Crowleyites. This is all satanic. The videos, they sold their souls for rock and roll. Get into the background of what's really going on in America today. And these forces are working at the highest levels of our government and other governments throughout the world today. So they're all available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Please go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. You can listen to our radio programs there 5 hours a day, directly or indirectly. You can pull down our newsletters. You have our permission to copy them and distribute them. We suggest you read our newsletters May and June of this year on the occult hierarchy, or if you need a free copy, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. If you don't have a Big Berkey or a Berkey water filter to help you in case there are difficult times, you don't readily have water like the people down there in New Orleans, well, you can get them through us, and if you get them through us, you get a free video or four tape set we produced. Call us at 1-800-544-8927. Pray for America. Pray for our leaders and ministers. Please pray for Radio Liberty. Until tomorrow at the same time, may the Lord be with you.